And there are a lot of drivers of burnout. The EHR is often cited as like the top five reasons for burnout. It's not quite true though, right? As I was saying before, the EHR is often the face of other things that may be contributing to burnout.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We are here today with Dr. Rebecca Mashturis, the Chief Medical Information Officer and Vice President at Mass General Brigham Hospital. Mass General Brigham is a health system based in Boston, Massachusetts, with 3,300 beds in 16 hospitals and 15,000 providers. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Yes, great. Glad to have you. So we're going to cover a wide variety of topics today, and we're going to start with a discussion on clinician-facing artificial intelligence tools. AI has been in the news over the last year with the emergence of ChatGPT and other large language models, also known as LLMs. I'd like to start with a discussion about not only what the hype is and you know what's in the news, but what's actually going on with AI in health systems today.
Big topic, obviously. And you know, AI has been around in healthcare for a long time. I think the advent of generative AI is truly novel, though, and new in the last year or so. What we're seeing today is the use of generative AI in facilitating administrative tasks, mostly, is where we're starting. Now, that's not to be minimized at all. As clinicians, we are inundated with these administrative tasks, everything from writing our notes, which actually has some real clinical value, right, to things like prior authorizations, where reasonable people can disagree about whether there's clinical value in those or not. And things that are both clinician-facing and patient-facing, like patient portals and responding to patient messages through the portal. And so where generative AI is starting now is trying to tackle some of those more administrative tasks. I think where everyone's hoping it will go eventually is to help us in our clinical work as well, but we are nowhere near that yet.
So before we go into a variety of different, I think we may go into a survey of different sort of AI tools that are available in large health systems today. I do want to kind of backtrack and get context. A lot of the promise of electronic health records had been to automate clinician workflows to free up their time to enhance the patient-provider interaction and improve health outcomes. And of course, the reality over the last 20 years of EHR implementation sometimes has not borne that out. There are many clinicians have expressed that there have been longer working hours, more administrative time, and more screens getting in between the provider and the patient interaction. Within that context, would you care to reflect upon AI's potential to actually deliver on the promise originally made by EHRs?
Yeah, I think it actually has huge potential in ways that we have not seen to date. So to date, we rely a lot on customization, personalization of workflows, making sure that staff are doing what they're supposed to be doing within the EHR at the appropriate times, trying to get everybody to work to the top of their license. But what we're seeing, as you correctly pointed out, is that there's a lot of clicking, right? And it's very different than if I were handwriting a note in my manila folder pre-EHR. And, you know, the promise of EHRs was not just to digitize my manila folder and make my handwriting more legible, although it's done that, but it was to be able to harness data, right? Be able to harness data to improve patient care and improve patient outcomes, improve safety, improve quality, improve equity. And unfortunately, we're like bogged down in the minutiae of clicking and screen switching and task switching of the EHR, and we haven't gotten to the point yet where we can actually harness all of that data and improve care outcomes. The fact that we're starting with administrative burden with generative AI is actually really exciting because it means we can finally get to the rest of those things. And so, you know, I think that we have been doing our best with trying to improve workflow within the EHR, improve training, improve optimization, enhancing the technology itself. But to really move the needle, I think we're going to see over the next, let's call it 3 to 5 years, a shift in how we're able to do that. because of things like generative AI and large language models, where they are going to be able to take a lot of the kind of more algorithmic work that we do out of our hands and just be able to do it. I think right now, the technology is new enough that no one's quite comfortable enough to just let it fly. And so we're all piloting these technologies, trying to understand the impact. We still very much have human in the loop with the technologies that we're piloting today, because we're dealing with patients' lives, right? And we don't want to get it wrong. But once we get it right, it will kind of change the trajectory of how we're able to address the administrative burdens that to some extent the EHR has imposed upon us, but to some extent we've actually done to ourselves in various other ways, right? So the EHR is often the face of a lot of other things that have gone on, regulatory requirements, safety checks, things which people actually really should want, right? Like, we want to be safe, we want to provide high quality care. Some of those regulatory requirements have come down to ensure that we are providing high quality care, ensure that we are providing equitable care. But they are coming through the EHR. And so people look at it as an EHR burden rather than a regulatory burden or a safety burden. And I guess, you know, calling them burdens probably isn't quite right either, right? Like, we should want to be providing safe care. But it's coming through the EHR. And so to the extent that we can remove some of the administrative tasks that we're doing, or remove some of the things, you know, some of the clicks we're making to be able to report to regulatory bodies that we've done something, because now the AI can just troll the chart and figure out that I did it without me clicking a button that I did do it, that will remove the barriers to providing care and the barriers to being able to get to the promise of the EHR, which is to deliver better care.
So when we're talking about a few different topics here, one is the potential for impact on well-being of the provider, and that's addressing provider burnout, but obviously also patient outcomes. And you've been talking about how we may evaluate some of that. You said maybe by having an AI eliminate the need for a provider to click a certain button in order to demonstrate that a task was completed. Can you speak more about the potential for impact on well-being of both the provider and the patient? And from there, I'd like to pivot into evaluation. Obviously, you can't improve what you can't measure. So, impact and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me as a CMIO, this is a space I live and breathe in. The intersection between technology and the clinician experience, and the intersection between technology and the patient experience. And, you know, we know that our providers are burnt out. We know that is increasing over time for many reasons, right? Not the least of which was the last 3 years of a pandemic. And there are a lot of drivers of burnout. The EHR is often cited as like the top five reasons for burnout. It's not quite true though, right? As I was saying before, the EHR is often the face of other things that may be contributing to burnout. We also know that things like, you know, control over one's schedule is a huge driver of burnout, or lack of control, I should say. But the EHR is certainly one of the, let's say, called top 10 reasons for people to be burned out. And it's not the EHR itself. It's the fact that I have to click the button to say that I did something that I already did, right? And so what we're really interested in is whether the AI that's coming in to alleviate the administrative burden is actually going to improve well-being. Is it going to reduce how much time I'm spending in the EHR overall? Is it going to reduce the amount of time I'm spending in the EHR in the evening when I want to be home with my family? Is it going to actually help me improve the care I'm delivering so I feel better as a clinician that I am providing high quality, safe, equitable care? And so those are the kinds of things that we want to be looking at. In addition, you know, as a health system, we're also concerned about how much these things cost and whether we're going to be able to afford them. And so is there, in addition to the clinician well-being return, is there a financial return to some of these? Are we able to recoup more of the costs of caring for patients through using some of these tools? On the patient side, right, there's AI already in place, right? Plenty of people interacted with chatbots. Particularly over the last 3 years, trying to figure out if their symptoms were COVID or not, and whether they needed to go to the hospital or not. And so that's an example of AI in practice that was improving the interaction that patients were having with our health systems. In addition, we use, voice recognition to route calls appropriately when patients call in. But there's other things that we can do. You know, patients, I'm a primary care doctor, right? Patients ask me to fill out forms all the time. What if I had a mechanism to automatically fill out that form based off of information that was already in your chart, right? You would get your form filled out faster. You would get whatever you were trying to get through submitting that form. And I, as the provider, wouldn't have had to spend my time filling out the form. I could have spent my time thinking about your really complex medical history or something else. Mm-hmm. And so from a patient perspective, right, it's about how can we improve the efficiency and satisfaction of your interaction with their provider and with the health system in general. I think also it has the opportunity to improve the equity of the care that we deliver, right? If we can look at real world outcomes, the kind of tome of medical literature, and identify true personalized medicine without having to know your entire genetic code, I can actually start providing higher quality, more equitable care for you, because I will remove the biases, the kind of inherent biases we have in healthcare within an individual, within the system, to try and address your needs in a more equitable fashion. So there's real potential on both sides of the coin, I think.
On that topic, Rebecca, on the topic of equity, I want to ask you about the quality of the data. There's been some reporting that a lot of LLMs have been trained on internet data or on data that's reflective of certain races, predominantly and sexes, white men, which may have a different impact on minority patients. What's the effect of any inherent bias in the data that was used to train LLM when it's integrated into the healthcare delivery, the delivery of healthcare?
Yeah. So this is something we have to be really careful about and really guard against. Because you're right, if we train models on outcomes that were inherently biased, we are going to perpetuate those biased outcomes, those inequitable outcomes. And that's precisely what we don't want to do. And so we have to do a few things. One is to make sure we're using diverse patient data to train the algorithms in the first place, right? So we can't use data from a single health system in a single small town in one part of the country. We have to use diverse really big data systems to train the algorithms in the first place. The second is to look at the performance of the algorithms and make sure that the performance is not inequitable, right? So if the algorithm suggests a certain intervention or a certain diagnostic study, is it driving outcomes that are in the end equitable, or is it perpetuating inequities? And if it's perpetuating inequities, we've got to back up and relook at the algorithm and be able to adjust the algorithm to drive equitable outcomes, even if the algorithm wants to drive inequities because of the data it's been trained on.
So bias is one of many different risks facing healthcare delivery systems looking to evaluate LLMs or other sort of machine learning type solutions. Other potential threats are HIPAA violations with an accidental release of personal health information while training the LLMs, sending out the wrong message without provider review and approval, or alert fatigue is a problem where instead of ameliorating the number of clicks, there's a potential that it may cause more clicks. Can you speak about some of these threats and how a CIO or a CMIO listening to this episode may find and ameliorate those threats in his or her own institution?
Yeah, and it goes beyond that too, right? There are beyond just HIPAA violations, other privacy violations are possible. Broad data release is certainly a fear that we all have. Just transparency of the algorithm and trust of the algorithm is really important for adoption. If I can't get a provider to trust what the algorithm is telling it, then they're never going to use it. They'll never pay attention to it. And part of that trust is knowing where it came from, being able to know how the algorithm was built, what data was used to build it, how it was tested. So having a transparent system. And the list goes on. I think, you know, as health systems, our responsibility is to raise the concerns and then address them. And so if, you know, to have a framework whereby we evaluate AI and really any technology, but in today's world, particularly AI, against that framework where we're going to look and say, is this an equitable, is this driving an equitable outcome? Is the algorithm transparent? Are there sufficient data security policies and practices in place where I can be, you know, at least secure that the data is safe, kind of whatever happens to it? And the list goes on. There are a number of professional and national organizations and even international organizations that are trying to come up with these frameworks, everything from like the White House to CHAI to NST, right? There are lots of organizations that are trying to come up with these frameworks. And I think it's incumbent on us as health systems to be looking at that literature the same way we look at the clinical literature to figure out what treatment is best for hypertension today. We have to be looking at that literature and figuring out what systems and processes do we need to have in place at our own organizations to be secure that we are mitigating and securing against any of those risks.
So, Rebecca, a lot of our listeners may now understand that there's some sort of abstract framework that we brought, a lot of concerns, a lot of things they should look for. I want to dive right into actual use cases. So Mass General Brigham, there you have different use cases with AI, maybe ambient listening, maybe portal messages, summarizing the chart. How do you evaluate what the lowest hanging fruit is? Where do we start first? And how do we pick a vendor or a solution, or do we homegrown a solution so that we minimize these threats and maximize these opportunity gains?
So it's a great question. And your comment earlier is absolutely right, right? I can't change what I can't measure. And so, and it also is going to be dependent upon your own organization's priorities and strategy, right? So if your organization has a strategic goal of improving clinician well-being, you may look at a different piece of technology than if your organization has a goal of improving patient experience or revenue generation, and the list goes on. And so you really have to take it from your organization's perspective about what's really driving your strategy at your organization. That being said, generally the IHI quintuple framework is a good thing to start with. If your organization doesn't have its own strategy, I would start there. And then part of it is also being driven by what technology is available, right? This technology is new enough that there are a few spaces where vendors are focused. So things like robotic process automation, ambient listening that you mentioned, drafting de novo messages either to patients or summarizing a chart. There are a lot, you know, kind of spaces within the clinical realm that companies are starting in. And so it's a triangulation really of what's your organization's priorities, what technology is out there, and what can you support as an organization moving forward. As you move forward with these things, you then have to evaluate them, right? What impact are they having? Are they having the impact that you need them to have as an organization? And so, you know, paying attention to things like, is it safe? Is it transparent? Is the data secure? That's table stakes. Then we have to figure out, is this actually improving clinician well-being, right? Are my providers less burned out? Are they spending less time in the EHR after hours? Are we turning messages around faster to our patients? Are the patients more satisfied with their experience with our health system? And those are the kinds of questions you have to start asking as you actually implement these technologies to figure out if they are having the impact that you intend them to have.
So you actually mentioned a lot of interesting KPIs just now. You said specifically spending less time in the EHR after hours. Are patients satisfied? That's a little bit more difficult, but you can have a HEDIS measure for that. Are they getting faster responses? Well, that's very discrete. What time did we receive the message and what time did they receive a response? Are there any other contributing, any other KPIs for clinician productivity, patient outcomes, population health management, or is it all on an individual basis? What would you consider would be the most important KPIs as we're evaluating AI solutions?
So again, there's table stakes. Is it safe? Is it secure? Is it equitable, et cetera? And then we're talking about impact. And the impact that you're going to be looking for is going to differ depending on what technology you're implementing, right? It's going to be different if I'm implementing ambient listening versus a call routing voice recognition system. And so you really have to then pay attention to what's the intent of the technology. If we're talking about clinician well-being, so we're talking about something like ambient listening to support note documentation, I'm interested in, you know, what I've talked about, the how much time are you spending documenting your notes? How much time are you spending in the EHR after hours? Are the notes understandable to our patients, right? Our patients are all reading their notes now. Can our patients understand the notes? What's the workflow? Are you actually satisfied with the workflow of going from the visit to the note? And then things like throughput, and that's where we're going to have potential impact to the bottom line, right? The revenue bottom line of the health system. So in urgent care, are you seeing more patients because you don't have to spend as long writing your notes? And so you're able to see more patients in urgent care. And so that's an impact to our financial bottom line. It's also an impact to our patients, right? Because now they can actually get the care that they came to see us for, and they're not waiting 6 hours to see us. Are we documenting better so that we, within value-based contracts, are better representing the risk that we take on with the patients we're seeing? So we're better representing how sick our patients are through our improved documentation with ambient listening. And so those are some of the other things that we're paying attention to as well. Again, we are very early stage in all of this and piloting it and trying to figure out what the impacts are.
So we are approaching the end of this podcast episode. I'd like to pose a final question to you. So many listeners may be thinking about timing. You said we're on a very, you know, we're in early days here. If I'm an SCMIO listening to this episode, I may be asking myself, all right, do I want to go ahead now and be on the bleeding edge? Or maybe I should wait a year or two so other organizations like Mass General Brigham can do the experiments, prove where the greatest value is, and I can just waltz in once the bugs are fixed and just go in there later and not deal with all the kinks and hassles right now. How would you answer a question like that?
Do you want to be an innovator, an early adopter, or a late adopter, right? In the grand scheme of the technology wave, what's your appetite for risk? What's your resources? What are the resources you can bring to bear in a kind of innovative space? Or are you in a system that doesn't have that kind of those kinds of resources and you do need to wait for something that's a little bit more proven because you can't afford to get it wrong, right? I have the privilege right now of being in an organization that has resources to bring to bear on innovation and does that, you know, in the clinical space and also in the operational space. I come from a system, you know, I came from a safety net system where we didn't have those kinds of resources and couldn't necessarily be on the bleeding edge of technology. And so it's not wrong either way you go about it, but it really has to do with your appetite and your resources. We will all get there eventually, but it's a matter of when, not if, I think.
Well, thank you very much. For our listeners who joined in the middle, this has been Dr. Rebecca Mishuris, the Chief Medical Information Officer and VP of Mass General Brigham. Rebecca, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.